Welcome to the Album Nerds Podcast with your hosts, Andy, Don, and Dude.
Don, I said, have I got a little podcast for you? It's the Album Nerds Podcast. Dude, I got Andy and Don with me. Andy, how you doing, man?
Dude, I'm doing pretty well. You know, it's we're in the midst of the summer of dawn, and I got my flannel on for some reason. I don't know what the hell I'm thinking. Great, yeah.
Good time of year. I've got one too.
It's gotten a little gloomy all of a sudden, a little rainy and overcast.
Yes, yeah, the clouds are settled in on the podcast.
Wonderful. That's the way we like it around here. This is the Album Nerds Podcast. We love albums, the album format. We love talking about them ad nauseum, because that's just who we are. We've got a great show for you today. The Summer of Don continues with Pearl Jam's 10. Don's going to ask us a deep, deep question. Then we're going to give some shout-outs to some albums and album-related items that we're digging. Then, of course, we'll spin that wheel of musical discovery to find out where the Summer of Don will take us next. But this time, it's all about 10.
I proclaim this the Summer of
Donny Lakey.
That's what I'm talking about.
All right. Well, the Summer of Don continues. Again, I've been going back into the archives of the Album Nerds before I joined the show, and I've picked out a bunch of records that I'd like to discuss. Gave it to Wadbot. She put it on the wheel. And this week, we are going to talk about a record you guys covered in episode 130, Pearl Jam 10.
Oh, hey, oh, cover Old Time Magazine.
Oh, opera man.
Oh, man. All right. Well, Pearl Jam 10 came out in August of 1991. Here was the first single, Alive. So 10 is the debut album from the rock band formed in Seattle in 1990. The lineup included former members of Mother Love Bone, guitarist Stone Gossard, and bassist Jeff Ament, along with guitarist Mike McCready, vocalist Eddie Vedder, and drummer Dave Cruzan. So Alive was originally a demo called Dollar Short. It had vocals by Andrew Wood, who was the lead singer of Mother Love Bone, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And so they circulated this demo. Apparently they got in the hands of Eddie Vedder, who, you know, wrote lyrics to it, sent it back to them, and they invited Eddie to audition for the band.
It's alive! It's alive!
So this is a song that's probably misunderstood when people first hear it. You know, kind of sounds like a
proof of life sort of thing. Or?
Yeah, but kind of dark about a boy or a young man finding out that his father, I guess his stepfather, is not really his father, and that his real father had died a long time ago.
But the song has taken on, because of the crowd's belief and the fans' belief, it has taken on a, you know, surviving hard times in your life and celebrating being alive. So it has changed, I think, over the years.
Yeah, this is supposedly part of the Mama Son trilogy of songs. So this one's about the kid finding out that his father's dead. And then Once, which is the opening cut of the album, is about him basically becoming like a serial killer. Is that right? Mm-hmm. And then the third song is what, Footsteps?
Yes.
Which was one of the B-sides. I can't remember what happens in that one.
That one, he's on death row and blaming his mom for everything, but then realizing that it's really on him.
That's when he got signed to Death Row Records and started rapping about it.
Yeah.
So as I mentioned, you guys discussed the album on episode 130. What were your thoughts then?
Well, I mean, for me, this was a record that I was a little bit too young to appreciate at the time. So I was kind of coming back to it as a kind of like a high school student, maybe 5 or 10 years later. But yeah, I mean, this was influential for me. I remember buying it at the store and thinking, like, being kind of embarrassed that I hadn't already owned this in, like, 1998 or whatever.
You should have just told the clerk that you wore your first copy out.
Yeah, that's right. So only I was cooler back in the 90s.
You didn't know me. I could have helped. I would have been the clerk at the store you went to.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, I think what struck me most back in, a few years ago when we reviewed this was just how lyrically sort of focused that it was on all these like societal characters, I guess, all these little vignettes mm-hmm. of different people, not so much the band itself, but kind of like people who had been discarded from society, sort of. So yeah, this record really stands out to me, I guess. Even though Pearl Jam kind of became like a poster child for the grunge movement, I don't know.
More like a poser child.
Oh,
jeez.
Just kidding.
Before they sold out.
Yeah.
Right, Andy?
Of course. It's coming.
Yeah, for me, when we talked about it on episode 130, I talked about how it had grown on me. I got Verses first, and that was my favorite Pearl Jam record, and I had not. I mean, I liked 10, but as I got older and listened to it more, I came to understand it more and see its beauty, and it's a little less raw and angry than Verses, and that appealed to me more as an older guy than when I was younger and a little angry about like stupid stuff.
Yeah.
Like I didn't have a nice car. That was my burden, you know? So.
Yeah. Of course I wasn't around for episode 130, but I was around when this album came out and I was very much immersed in MTV at the time. So I couldn't avoid it. And I think I always liked the record. I don't think I actually ever owned it, but I used to borrow it from people and, you know, I knew most of the songs and, you know, I always kind of liked it, but I think I kind of kept it at arm's length just because it was a scene that maybe I was avoiding or something.
You had two magical years of it sitting in the CD collection in our living room. You could have listened to it anytime you wanted to.
Magical years.
All right. Just another regret. Okay. Well, let's hear some more. This is actually the closing cut, if you don't include the extra tracks or the extra
whatever that is.
This is a Release.
For you.
It's impossible not to close your eyes when that song is playing. Do you guys agree?
Yeah, it's powerful.
Man, yeah, that song just sends me, man. Every time I hear it, it's cathartic, I guess. I don't know. It just feels like you're being releasing something, letting it go. Great way to close the record out. Maybe my favorite Pearl Jam song. I really come to love that one. Supposedly it's one of the first songs they recorded once they kind of initially assembled as a group. Eddie wrote the lyrics in the moment. There seems to be largely about, you know, the father figure that he never met and kind of releasing himself from that burden of never knowing his father. My clickbait headline for Pearl Jam's 10 is Launched into Stardom, Pearl Jam Delivers an Introspective Classic. I think this has kind of earned that classic status for me, coming back to it after all these years. It really held up well.
Yeah, it's in the conversation with classics by The Who or Led Zeppelin even, you know, in terms of its impact, its influence, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, totally.
They're heroes. Those bands were their heroes and they reached those heights too.
Yeah. I think this time around, what impressed me most or stood out to me most was just how sort of polished and completed sounding this record is. Both from like a production standpoint and just the songwriting is very, the lyrics are very thought-provoking and introspective, and the band just sounds so clean. All the guitar solos are like perfect, and the recording just sounds spacious and beautiful, and they have all these cool little effects and stuff, and like it's hard to believe this is their debut record coming out of like, you know, the grunge movement, which is supposed to be all dirty and, you know, filthy sounding. This is not that. And it's kind of cool to hear a band emerge like fully formed. Like it almost feels like it was meant to be in a way.
Yeah. And they were still probably feeling each other out at that point.
But a lot of the music was already established, those demos and everything. So Eddie came and put the lyrics together for a lot of them. But I think they already had polished up those tunes. They'd been probably playing them over and over again, waiting for someone to put words on it, you know? So I think that may be part of why it sounded so good. But one of the coolest parts for me is that, especially first albums, it was so real, right? You know, it was so just human beings expressing themselves musically before having any kind of, you know, the second record, and often the second record for bands is then about success or the pressures of it or the record companies are evil or what, you know, all that comes in later. This was just so innocent in a way, you know.
Let's hear another track. Here is Black.
And all I taught her was
sort of an epic ballad in the middle of the record. When I was in college, I had a roommate that didn't play any other song from the album. He would just play this one kind of loop, which annoyed me, but it did creep into my psyche. And, I think it's an amazing song. According to Vedder, it's about first relationships and, having to let go, which, makes a lot of sense now when I listen to the lyrics. Supposedly inspired by American Music Club. Have you ever listened to American Music Club?
Mm-mm.
They're like a rock band in the 80s that Eddie Vedder was into. So the record company had actually pushed hard for this to be a single, and the band refused, and they said they didn't want the emotional weight to be destroyed in a music video.
Yeah.
So that's kind of cool.
That's awesome. Yeah. It was still like on radio though and stuff though, if I recall correctly.
Yeah. It ended up being adopted by like alternative radio and stuff.
The performance on MTV's Unplugged was like iconic. It was so intense and acoustic that MTV started playing that clip as a video. I remember them doing it. They played during the regular. So they played that performance as a video, even though Pearl Jam had not made a video for the song and not released it as a single. But
man,
it was Cha-Ching City when anything relating to those bands and that,
can't fight the Cha-Ching
flannel clad era. You can't fight the Cha-Ching. Wins every time.
So my clickbait headline for this record is Mookie Blaylock schools Lucius Jackson on the court and in the studio. It's stupid, but
I think that's what
Mookie Blaylock was. It was apparently like their first name, or they're operating under that name at least temporarily until they came up with the name Pearl Jam. And I just threw in Lucius Jackson because there was a female rock band at the time known as Luscious Jackson.
Yeah.
So it was interesting to have two bands named after NBA players.
Well, and Luscious Jackson was on Grand Royal Records when the Beastie Boys were at their powerful height, and they had their own little label and were signing bands. In my naked eye, I saw
there we go.
Pouring rain coming down on me.
So, I think this is, when it comes to, the grunge era, probably the two big albums I think of are Nirvana, Nevermind, and Pearl Jam 10. But I was kind of thinking as I'm listening to this and figuring out how to talk about it, what is grunge? Is it a genre of music?
It's a hashtag. I mean, in today's parlance, it's just some term someone threw on it to try to define what was non-definable. All these bands that sounded totally different.
Totally different.
That were from the same area. And then anything that sounded remotely like it, or if guys had long hair and maybe when they sang, they were they were signed,
Yep.
It was the record label cha-chingitization of everything.
Yeah, no, it's a really good question, Don. On Wikipedia, this album is labeled as being in the grunge genre, but this does not sound at all like Nirvana to me. It's not even close. So,
Mudhoney or
any of those heavier bands. This is more like a classic rock sound.
Yeah, exactly. Is there a big four in grunge? Like, I would say Pearl Jam, Nirvana, Soundgarden, and Alice in Chains.
Yeah,
Pearl Jam's definitely the most classic rock sounding. I think. I still hear elements of metal and punk rock, but it is more like a classic rock sound, I think.
Yeah, they're the most mild sound, like sonically. They're not as hard rock.
Yeah, there's not a lot of distortion and down-tuning and stuff like that going on.
More melodic.
But it does rock.
Yes, it does.
Okay, let's hear a little more. Here is Jeremy.
At the time, I had kind of tired of this song because it wasn't as energetic as some of the others. And, I preferred songs like Garden and Deep, the deeper cuts on the record. But it really highlights what Pearl Jam was about, Eddie Vedder was about, where pointing out social issues, and a line like King Jeremy the Wicked, like within his own world. He was this bad guy, but really he was just an innocent kid that got pushed around and couldn't handle it and, you know, took his own life, which is based on a true story that Eddie saw in the paper. And then he mixed it with a kid he knew when he was in middle school, you know, so some of the other images of picking on the boy and all that kind of stuff, it's a mixture of things. It's not like a one story. It's not a Lifetime movie of a particular story.
Right. It seems like he does that a lot, where he kind of just combines different elements together to create some sort of thing that's loosely based on reality, but fictionalized, dramatized for art's purpose. It works well, though.
Yeah, and just it really sums up what they were as a band with, like you talked about earlier, Andy, the, you know, homelessness and other issues, societal issues that as observed by Eddie Vedder and come out in a form of poetry.
Yeah.
My clickbait headline to describe the album, "Can't Find a Vedder Man." Pearl Jam's 10 brings genuine intensity to the Alterna Kids and a unique vocal style later spoiled by the biz.
Biz Markie?
I wish.
Get down with the hip hop.
You. You're alive.
Would you say he's just a friend?
You know, the influence, not only the social issue type stuff, which I think we saw more of in music again after this. I think, you know, there was a lot of that in the 60s, but...
Yeah, totally.
So in the 70s, I mean, we had, you know, your Marvin Gaye's and your Stevie Wonder's in the soul space with some social messaging and plenty of other artists as well. But you also had disco take over the airwaves and soft rock, the Carpenters and all that stuff, which is a lighter side of life. And
definitely in the 80s.
And in the 80s, it was there, but, you know, like there was the issue of, was the heart of rock and roll still beating? And Huey Lewis in the News let us know that it was. But to be fair, also in the 80s, we had USA for Africa, you know, We Are the World, and Do They Know It's Christmas? I mean, there was stuff going on. Just the pop music scene was very up and light, and that continued into the late 80s with, like, you know, hair metal and all that stuff, which was fun, girls, 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 all that kind of stuff, right? So in the rock and roll, in the hard rock space, then we started, you know, Pearl Jam's influence, I think, was very strong in starting to bring that subject matter more into hard rock and metal adjacent sounds, right? And then Eddie's unique vocal style certainly then influenced other artists and upcoming bands.
Very memeable, you know, even in the 90s, before memes were really a thing. Like, he was all over the place. Yeah.
But there's so much more to it than just the sort of the mumbly, monotone, grumbly stuff. I mean, there's just amazing vocal performances on this album. And he really does have a pretty strong range, right? And he really belts out some notes on this.
Well, and letting loose with some lots of vocal affectations, as, you know, other artists have done, and he's kind of doesn't do that as much anymore. But so much woo woos and ha ha yeah and all that stuff that got memed, and I think part of the reason they probably dialed that back, but that really added a lot to the feeling and the intensity of some of the songs. You know?
Yeah, totally.
I mean, half of the song Jeremy is. Oh, but it's still like, it's still somehow engaging.
And, No, he's great on this record, man, especially on the B side when things have a little more chance to open up and he kind of can scat a little bit more, I guess, or do whatever, kind of making words up. And man, he's impressive, man. It's hard to believe he wasn't the vocalist before this. Like, he just kind of came into this like untrained and.
Well, yeah, he was in a band called Bad Radio, and some of, you know, like Better Man was a part of their set list back then, but it was more of a funk, sort of chili peppery, very weird. If you go back and watch, there's some live performances from like 1989 and 90, maybe a little bit of Faith No More vibe.
Okay, interesting.
But yeah, Eddie's scatting there is more to like a funk beat, so it's a little different.
Interesting. Let's check it out.
All right. Well, I think we all like this record, so I'm going to nominate it for the Album Nerds Hall of Fame. Yeah, the main reason I want to nominate it is I remember in...
For me? It's for me?
No, in like 10th or 11th grade, we had to read that book, Ethan Frome, I think by Edith Wharton. And so we'd go, Ethan Frome. Anyway, so it gets my vote for the Album Nerds Hall of Fame. How about you, dude?
Duh. All right, so I'm going to say yes, obviously. I think Pearl Jam 10 is a classic rock album. I think it is influential on many levels. Pearl Jam stayed true to who they were throughout their career. They continue to make music that means something to them, that is about important things in the world. It's just those things have changed as they have grown and changed. But they're still out there fighting the good fight, kind of like Neil Young, you know? I think their career trajectory has been very much like what he was able to do with his. And I think young generations are going to discover Pearl Jam and make great music. I think it all started with Pearl Jam 10. So yes, 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 yes.
Andy.
Yeah, definitely yes for me. I think I'm more positive on it today than I was even a few years ago. Get all the hits on the front, and the B-side is just super interesting. So, yeah, definitely.
All right, well, congratulations, Pearl Jam. You are now in the Album Nerds Hall of Fame.
Excuse me. I'd like to ask you a few questions.
All right, it's time for Deep Questions by Don. So, back in the 90s, Pearl Jam famously took on Ticketmaster, refusing to play venues that used the ticketing service. These days, the U.S. Justice Department filed a lawsuit against Live Nation, Ticketmaster's parent company, for monopolistic practices. Basically, if you attend a concert or a sporting event, you're pretty much forced to deal with Ticketmaster. What other shitty entities are we forced to deal with? I don't think Ticketmaster would ever be a sponsor of this program, right?
Not, no, no.
If they are, then we have officially sold out. And I will take the cha-chings. Ticketmaster, I apologize. Don's a fool.
All right, let's burn some more bridges here. Let's see. Yeah, I mean, Ticketmaster, fuck them. I mean, they're terrible. Even back in the 90s, Pearl Jam hated them, and here we are 30 years later, and they're still same problems. For me, there's one company that I deal with a lot in my professional life, which is web design. A lot of my clients will come to me with an existing GoDaddy website or account that I have to deal with. And GoDaddy, for whatever reason, they become like the de facto answer for people who don't know much about the internet. No, they're terrible. They have the worst customer service I've ever dealt with of any company, and I've lost many years off my life because of frustrations dealing with those fuckers. Excuse my language.
At least you're not. Well, but now that if they listen to the show and if they listen to the last episode, they'll know that if they meet with you face to face, they can get their way. So GoDaddy, face to face with Andy, if you want to get business done.
That could be it, man. It's always over the little chat, and they, oh my gosh.
Yeah. You'll hear your doorbell. Daddy himself will be there ready to talk.
How about you, dude?
A service that I love, Amazon. I mean, I bought so much stuff from Amazon. The convenience. At one time, you got much better deals. Now, it's not so necessarily the truth. But Amazon Prime, all the things that come along with that, it's phenomenal. However, it's a problem, right? You know? So I used to buy records and all sorts of stuff from Amazon, but now I do make an attempt when I can. If the products or something I can get in the case of records on Discogs or from a local record store, I'd rather do that. If it's something I can't get anywhere but Target or Walmart, I might as well just use Amazon. But I have tried to be a better steward for local businesses and try and stop being so dependent on Amazon.
Yeah. That's not good. It's so hard to find anything locally nowadays. Like, and just Amazon's almost like your only choice for many products. That sucks.
I don't know. I'm dependent on it. And for that reason, I feel like I am stuck. I'm forced to deal with them, but I love and hate them.
Well, my answer is kind of a cliche, but I'm going to say record companies. You know, I just think notoriously they've, you know, kind of probably crushed, you know, certain careers or dismissed art that probably, you know, if given a chance, could have been successful. But they're so, you know, intent on making money, you know, that they move on to the next thing or the next, you know, when Pearl Jam is successful, suddenly, you know, they sign every Pearl Jam clone. But on the other hand, I recognize, you know, it's an entity that has to exist. And, but, you know, I mean, if record companies didn't exist, we wouldn't be able to do this show. You know, I mean, not really.
We wouldn't have Pearl Jam. We wouldn't have the Beatles. We wouldn't have any of that stuff without them. It's the what comes after. The initial discovery of something new and cool is great. And they had the resources to do it, the resources to finance it and get the records made. But then when it takes off, then it's the cloning afterwards that's the gross part, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, the cloning's when it gets messy, for sure. The unintended consequences.
Yeah. Well, even, you know, having worked in radio for a while, you know, the record people, they'd be working you on a single, you know, for like a month. And then all of a sudden the next week, like, oh, no, forget about that one. You know, here's the new one we want to play. So we want you to play. So it's, you know, just so quick to dismiss things. And, yeah. Anyway. What other entities suck? Let us know. Contact us on our social media, Facebook, Instagram, and Threads. Also on our website, albumnerds.com.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
All right. Well, on your way back from Seattle this week, you know, did you discover anything else that you're digging?
Yeah, of course, man. You guys got my little... little carry-all here for the journey. Show you.
Kitty carry-all?
Show you what I got in my carry-all. Yeah.
That was Cindy Brady's doll, right?
Yeah, that was Cindy Brady's doll. Thank you.
You guys.
On a television show called The Brady Bunch.
The carry-all is missing.
All right. Well, we talked about Beastie Boys briefly earlier on the episode. We got a new hip-hop duo by the name of Joey Valance and Bray, I believe is how you say his name. They have an album called No Hands. They are from Pennsylvania. Kind of a cool, like, 90s alternative rap style. This the first single is called Where Are You From? I feel like Michael Cera in his swag
era. What I got won't share up. Did he say Michael Cera?
Yes.
As in George Michael from Arrested Development?
Yes. This is about, you know, today. The names of today.
Yes, the sound of the 90s, the names of today. Exactly.
Yeah, I'll check it out.
It's pretty good.
It'll either be a disastrous flop for me or...
Yeah, it might be.
Yeah, we'll see.
I thought it was like a joke album, but it's pretty legit. All right, next up for me, a little more serious, by the singer-songwriter Bat for Lashes. She has a new album called The Dream of Delphi. This is her sixth studio album for the songwriter from London, England, Tasha Khan. It seems to be largely focused on her...
Tasha Khan! Tasha Khan. Tasha Khan.
I wanted to go there, too.
I thought you guys were going to be like, Khan!
A lot to work with here.
Let's play the opening and title cut, The Dream of Delphi.
Ooh. Oh, got a little Kate Bush situation going on here.
This is one of her biggest influences, actually.
So is the Bat for Lashes, is that like the mascara wand? Or is that... Or like instead of using a whip, you know, you're using a bat to lash somebody?
You'll have to ask Mrs. Khan about that. I can't answer that question. All right, last one up for me is from the... post-punk three-piece named Goat Girl from London, England. They have a new album called Below the Waist. Kind of love the title. W-A-S-T-E.
Below the waist or blow the waist?
Below the waist.
Below.
Okay.
Below.
Below. Okay.
Below, sure.
But it's waste as in like garbage or refuse?
Yes, exactly. Below.
Got it.
Below the waist. All right. This is the third full length. The first single is called Ride Around.
Sounds grungy.
Yeah, definitely got some punk edge to it. I think you're kinda close. But also kind of pretty.
Cool. I'll check it out.
What you been digging on, Don?
Well, I think I've mentioned them in the past. The band The Decemberists from Portland, Oregon. They've got a new double album coming out. Very ambitious. It's called As It Ever Was, So It Will Be Again, out this week. There's a song called Burial Ground.
You know, they always have this kind of melancholic sound, but it's also annoyingly upbeat at the same time.
Yeah. I can buy that. And sometimes they're very folky, and sometimes they're kind of more indie rocky. They're kind of kind of hard to classify.
That was interesting lyrics, though, on their songs, I find.
A lot of historical stuff in there. Yeah, so looking forward to that one. And then the Pixies have a new single out. They consider it a double A side. So on one side is a song called You're So Impatient, which is good. But then the other side is a cover of the Doris Day hit, Que Sera Sera.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's interesting.
Check this out.
That sounds less
Doris Day-y.
Yeah, it sounds less hopeful and more sort of like, well, I guess this is how it's going to be.
It's like a funeral dirge.
Sort of like an Eeyore thing. Just accept it. Life sucks.
Yeah, different feel than the original.
All right. Well, dude, what are you digging?
All right, so I talked a couple weeks ago about the Bon Jovi documentary series, and a part of that was John's discussion about his voice not working so much and having to get some surgeries and working on it really hard. They did just release an album, 16th studio album, called Forever, and play a little bit of Living Proof. So they're less energetic, but more introspective. I think this is more a celebration of their legacy, having fun making some songs and talking about life and all that. And their lives have changed quite a bit. So it's an interesting listen. It's probably not going to be on my end of year top list or whatever, but he's like working his ass off to be able to sing. So
that's cool.
He sounds pretty good. I mean, his voice sounds good and not too constipated.
Yeah. They're not going to tour, at least for now, because I think he can't do 4 hours, you know, 3 hours a night for 5 days a week and stuff yet. But here's hoping that they do. I'd like it if they got one more tour in, because watching that documentary, you find out just how hard he worked to make all this happen. So
it's cool.
And next, artist I'd never heard of, happened to stumble across on Spotify, Josh Malloy. The album is Where You Came From. We'll play a little bit of the title track.
It's a little Stones-ish.
So he's this is his third album, apparently. He's from Oklahoma, and I dig the vibe and the voice. I'm still figuring it out. I've only listened to it a couple of times, but the songs are about the road, trying to make it as an artist, family, roots. But no song titles refer to trucks, cold ones, or whiskey, so it's encouraging. We'll see how it goes.
Sounds promising.
Anything, Don?
Sounds good.
Is it country or is it blues rock?
I'd say technically it's country, but it's
very bluesy.
Southern.
Blues rock.
There's that Chris Stapleton Southern rock kind of thing going on. So.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
So as always, I try to bring a record that I picked up on vinyl. I recently got Alice in Chains' Jar of Flies.
You bought a jar of flies? What kind of sicko are you, man?
Yeah. Well, I've collected and sold many jars of flies, but I wanted to get the best one, so I went to it. I got it on Amazon. Yeah, No Excuses was and No Excuses was the big song from it, I'd say, all over radio and MTV. But I picked up this album from the website Experience Vinyl. Alice in Chains with their EPs was so interesting in between albums. Always exciting. It seemed like they were always putting out music. So
this was considered an EP. Aren't there like 8 songs on it?
Yes, but it was not 11 or 14 of running time, an hour plus, like all the albums at the time. So yeah, it's always fun to go back and get that stuff when you happen to see it. So
okay, what are you digging? Let us know. Hit us on the socials, Instagram, Facebook, and Threads. Also on our website, albumnerds.com.
It will be a discovery of extraordinary value.
Well, it's about that time on the show when I'm reminded of the great Canadian singer-songwriter and guitarist, Neil Young.
The godfather of grunge.
Mr. Young said, "Pearl Jam is a band I have a lot of respect for. Nirvana and Sonic Youth I feel the same way about. Mumford & Sons, My Morning Jacket, Wilco, Givers, and Foo Fighters are just some of my favorites. I expect bands that give me something of themselves that I can feel. Posing bands turn me off, generally speaking. It all has to do with the feeling I have about them. That is what music is to me, a feeling. It's similar with people, too." I thought he nicely summed up kind of the sentiments of the grunge era there. With that in mind, let's bring out my friend and yours, Wadbot, and see what we'll be discovering next week.
The summer of Don continues. With that in mind, I will be choosing which albums from Don's curated list you will be exploring this summer. Next time, you will be treated to Stevie Wonder's groundbreaking album, Inner Visions, where Mr. Wonder seamlessly blends genres and social commentary into a memorable listening experience.
Sweet. Back to Stevie. I think we had a pretty good talk. I'm hoping Don can bring it. Bring this thing to the next level.
Oh, he always does. Yeah, it should be fun. Love that record. Any excuse to listen to Inner Visions is okay with me.
It's going to be a good week.
Don't forget, you can suggest topics for The Wheel up on our website, albumnerds.com, as well as vote for any ongoing Album Nerds Hall of Fame nominations.
How do you feel about Stevie Wonder's Inner Visions? How about Pearl Jam 10? What else are you listening to? Leave a comment on our website or email us at podcast@albumnerds.com. Also, follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Threads at Album Nerds. Please subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast app. And if you'd like to support the show, you can do so via PayPal at albumnerds.com/support.
Thank you so much for joining us on the Album Nerds podcast. We'll catch you next week with some deep inner visions.
Nice listening, everybody. Catch you then.
We're going to find some higher ground.
That's right.
Yeah.
A people, a keep on learning. Soldier.
Whoa.
A keep on warring.
Damn.
I feel like you're on American Idol right now. I mean, it was a little pitchy, dog, but I think you're going to Hollywood.
Yeah, you're in.
I thought Andrew was going to God awful.
Rubbish.
Rubbish, there it is.